The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy
with Nissan
on News Talk.
I made my mistakes, but in all of my years of public life, I have never profited from public service. I've earned every cent. And in all of my years of public life, I have never obstructed justice. And I think, too, that I can say that in my years of public life, that I welcome this kind of examination, because people have got to know whether or not their president is a crook. Well, I'm not a crook. I've earned everything I've got.
Yes, the famous words of President Richard Nixon. That speech was actually given to a group of newspaper editors in Disney World, Florida, in the midst of the Watergate scandal. A scandal and a story that broke 50 years ago today, half a century exactly, since the world was made aware of this. Well, Scott Lucas joins me. Scott, of course, is Professor of International Politics at the University of Birmingham and Editor-in-Chief of EA Worldview. Scott, for some people, I think you're going to have to remind us exactly what Watergate was all about.
Well, as you mentioned, it's the 50th anniversary of the night of June the 17th, 1972, when five men broke into the Democratic National Committee's headquarters, which were in the Watergate Hotel on the Potomac River in Washington, D.C. And in the middle of a presidential campaign, they tried to photograph documents. They tried to put wiretaps on phones, but they were caught. Security personnel noticed they were in the building. Police apprehended them. Now, the matter might have ended there, but they left clues that they, in fact, were working for something called the Committee to Reelect the President. That was headed by Richard Nixon's former Attorney General, John Mitchell. Now, Nixon always said he never knew about the break-in. He always expressed surprise about the break-in. What he got done for was, however, was to try to cover up any connection between his staff and these operations. Dozens of people connected with Nixon were convicted. Nixon himself would have faced impeachment and conviction because of some dogged reporting, especially by the Washington Post. But under pressure from bipartisan Senate committee hearings, he finally realized he could not last in office. He resigned in August of 1974.
So let's go back then to this idea that the president himself didn't actually know about it. Who was doing the running on it? Whose idea was this? Let's break into their convention and find out what they're up to.
Well, the thing is that even if Nixon didn't know about specifically about this break-in, Nixon had a previous, as we would say, in terms of authorizing dirty tricks operations. For example, he authorized what were called the White House plumbers. They were called plumbers because they supposedly fixed leaks. In other words, they targeted journalists. They targeted people they thought were handing out information to the media. They then carried out break-ins against them, carried out attempts to wiretap them. His crew around him, and he knew about this, broke into the office of a Washington, D.C. psychiatrist to try to get material on Daniel Ellsberg, the man who leaked the Pentagon Papers. He tried to get material on his political opponents through methods that would be considered at least legally very, very dodgy. So he had carried this out for a few years. He was a politician that was on very thin ice. So even if he did not specifically know in advance about the burglary, the fact is his guy, John Mitchell, was there with a mandate to try to carry out dirty tricks on the Democrats. And part of the dirty tricks were indeed to authorize this burglary.
And how quickly after the story emerged did Nixon become a kind of the metaphorical dead man walking? Because we heard that clip there where he was, he was doing the politician's thing. I welcome this scrutiny. It's a good thing. It's about transparency.
Well, contrary to the way I think that, sort of history looks back and compresses everything, it took a long time.
Right.
As I said earlier, he didn't resign until August 1974, which was 26 months after the break-in. And perhaps more pertinently, 4 months after the break-in, 5 months after the break-in in November 1972, he won the biggest landslide in American presidential history, defeating George McGovern. It took a long time for reporters to make the connections between the five men who were, on trial for this break-in, people like G. Gordon Liddy, people like the former CIA agent E. Howard Hunt, were involved in supervising these men. It took a lot of investigative journalism. And it really wasn't until 1973 that you got the big break that tied Nixon to it, which was when hearings started to be convened on what was going on, a man named John Dean in Nixon's office said, well, you know, there's a taping system. Richard Nixon taped every meeting that was in the office. And once the tapes were there, people said, well, look, if there were tapes there, there's probably conversations about what might have gone on connected to Watergate. Nixon fought that for months, claiming executive privilege. But once the court said, no, there's a public interest in getting these tapes, it was what was on those tapes that really doomed him.
Yeah, and I'm sure the hope of people investigating it was that there might be evidence he knew about it in advance. But as you say, what emerged in those tapes was the crime of cover-up.
Yeah, it was a crime of cover-up. And, you know, I think if you probably put it technically, certainly obstruction of justice would have been the criminal charges if Nixon had not been pardoned by his successor, Gerald Ford. I think there would probably be other campaign violations, to say the least, that Nixon would have faced. As it was, of course, the pardon was issued as soon as Nixon resigned, so we'll never know what would have happened in terms of a criminal trial, which has its interesting parallels in terms of 2022, given the Capitol attack and the allegations around it, as to whether we ever see anybody facing accountability for that action.
Yeah, because you mentioned this was bipartisan, this investigation. I mean, was that how early did that emerge, that kind of bipartisan nature of it? Was there any sense of this being kind of a political division?
Well, I mean, certainly, you know, a lot of Republicans in the early stages of this, you know, would have said, oh, no, this is just politics. This is just simply the Democrats who are being sore losers about the election. You know, this is the meddling media. But once the weight of evidence started to come out through 1973, especially getting into the autumn of 73, not all Republicans, but a lot of Republicans said, no, we've got to go through a full and transparent process for accountability. And so when the Senate hearings took place, so these are the hearings that decide, of course, whether or not there's grounds not only to impeach, but to convict if Nixon's impeached. The co-chairman was a man I remember well from when I was a boy, the Republican Howard Baker of Tennessee, one of the most honest politicians you could deal with. And he and Sam Ervin, the Democrat, ran this as a really effective hearing to get the facts out. And I think that's probably the biggest difference for me between Watergate and where we are 50 years later, in that you have no semblance from the Republican side, apart from those two House Republicans who've risked their careers by being on the House Select Committee on the Capitol attack, Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger, that we would get any type of bipartisan approach for the truth and to protect American democracy.
Obviously it inserted this word kind of Watergate or gate rather into the kind of the lexicon, and we still have it today and people use it without even knowing where it comes from, I would suspect a lot of the time. Did it change politics in any other way?
Well, first of all, I'm so tired of gate being appended to so many things for a quick headline. And I'm speaking, of course, as we're in the middle of party gate here in the UK. In terms of whether it changed things, I think what it showed is that the American system at a time of crisis, because remember, this was during Vietnam. This was during a severe economic downturn. The American system could survive, and that it might be a flawed system. There might be a lot of issues with it, but it still held firm for more than 200 years. And I think whether it changed things, it's the question of whether we have gotten into an America which is now so divided and so polarized and so caught up in the combination of a toxic social media, a toxic traditional media, I'm looking at you, Fox, and a toxic politics, that people care enough, that they care enough to preserve the system rather than, say, a particular party, or rather than a particular individual like Donald John Trump.
Scott Lucas, Professor of International Politics at the University of Birmingham and Editor-in-Chief of EA Worldview. Scott, it's always good to talk to you. And of course, you can hear Scott regularly chatting to Pat in the mornings here on the Pat Kenny Show on News Talk.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With Nissan.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.